Tony.
Good morning.
Good morning, bro. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Dude, I'm good. I'm doing really well. My daughter's got a swim lesson this morning, which is why I have that hard stop at 9:30.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's a very controversial method, and I've been like debating whether or not I wanted to talk about it, but everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's always got an opinion.
Is this where you just kind of put them in the water and see what happens?
So that's the last video you see, right? Mm. So that's the last video that they'll show on social media, and people will freak out being like, why are you doing that? That's after 6 weeks, and assuming that at the end of 6 weeks, they've actually shown that they can do that. Mm-hmm. So it's called ISR. I don't know what it stands for.
Okay.
Let me Google it really quick. What is ISR? ISR swimming stand for? Infant swimming resource is what it stands for. So the whole purpose is to be able to have them, if God forbid your child falls into the water, that they can at the very least float right side up and stay there until someone can rescue them. Now, in an ideal world, I'll never let my daughter be in a situation in which she's unsupervised to let that happen. But
yeah,
you never know. You never know. So we started her on this about 2 weeks ago. And the first day, the woman lightly put her in and she was on her back and she was completely supported and just getting her used to the water. And every day for the last, it's 5 days a week, 5 days a week for 6 weeks straight, but it's 10-minute sessions. So it's like, it's just 10 minutes in, out, chick, chock, boom, boom. She's just getting her used to the water and being on her back. And she's completely supported the whole time. And she's just recently started like to let go for like a couple seconds and then bring her hand back. So there's no throwing, there's no tossing. It's always on her back. She's very supported. And dude, yesterday she floated for 20 seconds on her own.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Like that's not insignificant. It's 20 extra seconds of time if like, God forbid, there's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so then apparently I was asking her, I was like, why at the end, like apparently the last day, assuming that they've shown that they have the ability to, you dress them up in full clothes and then essentially you just like sort of drop them into the water. And the reasoning is because when they actually do fall into water, odds are it's going to be a surprise. They're not going to be just being in there already. And like they'll often have clothes on. And it's like you need to like teach them to learn how to deal with that. And I was like, yeah, it makes total sense. But a lot of people on social media get pissed about it. But anyway, it's definitely something we're comfortable with and watching it every day, seeing her do. So yeah, got that in about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Wow. Did you do like a lot of research beforehand about the safety and effectiveness of it?
And like literally with everything, just like with nutrition. Mm-hmm. Some people like carbs are going to kill you. Some people like fats are going to kill you. Some people like protein is going to kill you. It's like no matter what. Some people like water is bad for you, right? It's like no matter what. So with swimming, with ISR, there were a lot of really amazing reviews. And there were also some that were like, don't do this. It scarred my child. It's going to kill them. Da, 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 da. Mm. It's like, okay, listen, we basically said we're going to give it one full week. And if there's any issue whatsoever, we'll pull her out. And the teacher was incredibly kind. This woman has like hundreds and hundreds of 5-star reviews. She's booked out the entire day. So she like a 10-minute class, but she's booked out from like 8 a.m. until like 4 p.m. just boom, 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 boom. And so like there's like lines of kids when we get there and there's one kid at a time, boom, 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 10 minutes each in and out. So it's, I mean, this woman has been doing this for like 30 years and she's amazing and we like her a lot.
Talk about specialization, right?
Like, mm-hmm.
What a niche.
So that's it, bro. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I've got jiu-jitsu after this.
Wow, let's go.
So I'm excited about that. Doing the one-on-one classes.
Nice. Have you been doing them recently?
I was away the past week. So I've only done one. This will be number two after like the intro. But it was so much fun, man. It was just...
Was it?
Yeah, just one-on-one. It was a different person. And he was just showing me basic escapes.
Nice, like, smart.
So it was just cool to kind of actually spend the time doing the reps on escapes from rear choke, side control, and from mount. And just repping those each side, going each direction.
That.
yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm like, this is the fun part before they throw me in with the wolves, you know?
So you're basically a black belt now. but it's funny. So white belt is very much that like learning escapes. Like that's the main goal of white belt, where in any position, your goal is to try and at least get safe.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's like, you can escape this position, you can escape that position. A lot of people go into jiu-jitsu or many martial arts and on day one, they think they're going to learn how to kill someone. It's like, no, all of white belt, which can be like upwards of 2 years, yeah, is let's just make sure you're safe. Let's just make sure you know how to get out of these positions, not how to inflict harm or control someone else, but how to make sure you can get out of a difficult situation, which is really, it's like the most important thing, how to get out of a difficult situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I'm excited to hear how this one goes.
Yeah. And just super surprising just how much athleticism is involved. Mm-hmm. You know, just bridging and shrimping over and over again. It's like, man, I felt my glutes that day. Like, I definitely felt that.
I love that. That's awesome, yeah, man. I'm stoked. I'm jealous. I haven't trained jiu-jitsu in 6 weeks because of a broken rib.
Yeah, how's your rib?
I just texted my coach maybe an hour ago saying, hey, we're starting on Monday because it's been 6 weeks. I got two x-rays. I actually need to get a CT scan, but it's still fractured, but it's exponentially better. So I was like, listen, I've had enough time off. I can do things now where like I can sit, I can do a sit up and it doesn't hurt. And I can do light rotations and it doesn't hurt. So I was like, listen, we're going to go back and just start drilling. We're not going to do any live sparring. We're not going to do any fighting, no like contact. It's just going to be just to get back in the movement patterning and all of that, because you lose it so fast. So I'm excited to get back in there and just start drilling again.
Yeah. Have you been able to do other physical activity in general?
Yeah.
Just to keep your...
Yeah. I've been lifting. My lifting is the best it's been in a long time, right? So my jiu-jitsu has been the worst. My lifting has been the best. I've still been able to work around the rib and lift weights. I haven't done the normal compound lifts that you would normally do, because that puts a lot of stress on your rib cage. You have to breathe in really, really deep and brace in order to make sure you're doing it properly. So I've been doing a body part split. So you'll love this. So day one, Monday, biceps. Day two, triceps. Day three, legs. Day four, upper body push. Mm-hmm. So it's chest, shoulders, triceps. Day four is Thursday is upper body pull. I apologize. So it's back. So it's like you're doing back, you're rowing, chin ups, all that. And then day five is upper body push. So chest, shoulders, triceps. And then every day I've been doing zone two. I've been doing zone two cardio. And so that's literally at least five, if not 7 days a week of zone two. And it's between 30 to 60 minutes, which I think will be helping a lot. But that body part split has actually worked wondrously for me, because I can lift really heavy without straining my ribs. I can continue to breathe throughout the whole thing. I'm not taking in deep breaths and bracing really hard, but I've also been really focusing on, especially for my goal of jiu-jitsu, working on things that I notice are weaknesses in jiu-jitsu. So for example, when I'm doing the upper body pull day and I'm doing rows, I'm not just speeding through the movements, which I never do, but I'm really focusing on slow, controlled tempo, because you'll notice your grip strength will go out when you're doing jiu-jitsu. You'll notice your biceps will start burning out. Mm-hmm. So I'm really focusing on slow, controlled tempos, often higher repetition sets, because that's like a jiu-jitsu match is 5 minutes and like you need to hold on and a lot of times pull for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm doing very long, slow sets to really still try and get as much of that stimulus as I can without actually doing jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You're turning a weakness into a strength.
Yeah, doing my best.
Both from your injury and also by targeting things that you've noticed have been lacking. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So we'll see how it goes back. The hard part is specifically with a skill, like whether it's jiu-jitsu or really any, could be painting, could be rock climbing, is just understanding the technique again. So it's going to be probably a rough first 2 to 4 weeks back, getting back to my technique. But that's why there's a saying in jiu-jitsu, they say drillers are killers.
Mm-hmm.
The people who just fight all the time without actually drilling technique, they get very good with mental toughness, but they often get in deep trouble when they go into a competition because they haven't drilled the technique enough. So I'm excited just to go in with no expectation of sparring, just purely technique, technique, technique.
Yeah, this could be a growth period for you.
Yeah, exactly. Every period can be a growth period if you look at it properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess who got a walking pad?
My man, did
this
you really?
This guy right here. Yeah.
Let's go. Who's got two thumbs and a walking pad? This guy. How do you like it?
It's awesome. My folks, they have a treadmill. And so whenever I go back there, I kind of look forward to getting on there.
Yes.
And so I think it'll just be really great when it's stupid hot out or when it's cold or rainy or whatever. Or I just don't want to leave the house, you know?
Yeah.
Throw it on in front of the TV or something and just get 45 minutes in.
Dude, I love that. And have you been doing that? Did you already, is it already there or no?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. So how's it like, cause I'm going to ask you some of the most common questions I get about it. But at this point, I feel like sometimes people hear me and it's like their dad is saying it like, all right, whatever, dad. So like, how's the noise? Is it very noisy? Is it something that like people would be able to hear if they were in another apartment or another office down the hall?
Yeah. So I can hear it when my girlfriend's upstairs. I can hear her going because she's right above me. And it's just like a little thump, 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 thump. It's nothing crazy. I could imagine if it was in the middle of the night right above your bedroom, that might be annoying. But you know, I'm also in a really old construction house. So
You
know, it,
like if you were in a new office building, the office below you probably wouldn't be able to hear it. If
office
it was like,
buildings,
you know,
I think the way they build them, no way.
Yeah, there's no
a
way.
A lot of these apartments that they're building nowadays, they're paper thin. You hear a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it really just depends
on
the situation. Yeah. Man, that's, a lot of stuff.
How, is it easy to maneuver? Is it like, could you put it under a bed or in a closet relatively? Is it hard to lift?
So I was going to get the one that you had recommended, and actually someone someone from the inner circle saw that there's a coupon and messaged me. It was awesome.
Oh, okay.
I was like, wow, this is so thoughtful. Thank you.
That's amazing.
And then I got to realizing I couldn't slide it under my couch because it's got supports in the middle.
Yeah.
So while it would fit, you know, in quotes under the couch, there's supports in the middle that are keeping it from going there.
Oh, your couch has the supports. Got it.
Yeah. And that's kind of the best place for it, is just slide it under the couch. So we found one that folds.
Oh, perfect.
It's called walking pad, believe it or not.
Okay.
And it folds. So I think there's probably some trade-offs in terms of, you know, cushioning or something. I actually don't know because I haven't tried any other ones, but it folds in half. So it's really small. Fits under like one section of the couch, and it's about 60 pounds. So I have no trouble with it. My girlfriend was able to pull it out, and it's been easy. It's been really easy.
Love that. Let's go. I love that, man. There's a new study that came out within the last few months. I spoke about it on my Instagram yesterday. It was a relatively small study. I believe it was like 33 participants, but it was a very, very important study. And it's just one of thousands talking about the benefits of walking. And this was done on a more of an older population, done on both people who were relatively healthy and also those with cognitive decline. And it was talking about how all these people did for 12 weeks, they walked 4 days a week for 30 minutes. Mm. That's it.
So much, right?
4 days a week, 30 minutes, excessive amounts. Not only did their cardiorespiratory fitness improve, which should be obvious, but there are a lot of people out there who say like that's not enough to like actually get exercise benefits, which is just patently false. But their cognitive improvements were off the charts. And I shared this on my page, and actually, let me see if I can find this message. It was very, very cool. Basically, a researcher around, oh, here we go, Sarah Hubbard, she responded to that post. She said, I'm a neurology nurse practitioner, and I've tried preaching this to my patients for years. A brisk 30-minute walk every day will reduce your risk of dementia and improve your cognitive functioning. Thank you for sharing. It's so true. And it's one of those things that's just overlooked. And people think I hate on things like cold baths and supplements and all of that stuff. I don't hate on them. If you want to do them, fine. And they do have benefits. But relatively, the benefits that those things have on your cognitive health are nothing compared to walking. It's minuscule. And people want to get like spend 2 minutes in ice bath because of all the benefits. And like, listen, if you like that and that's your entry point to fitness, great. I would rather eat glass than get into an ice bath. But going on a walk with my wife and daughter is unbelievably enjoyable, or going on a walk by myself and listening to a podcast or just listening to nature, whatever it is. It is wild, the improvements that you see from it. So yeah, I'm glad you got that, man.
Yeah. It's hard to say, you know, how much is placebo or not, because I guess I was using the treadmill last week and then I've been using the walking pad this week. But I feel like I have more energy, and my swings yesterday felt easier. And it's I don't know, it could have been just the random fluctuations that happened. But right now,
or if it's placebo, I'll take that placebo every day. If someone gave me a pill with water in it, and because I thought that that water pill was going to give me more energy, and it did, and I got more energy because of it, like, I'd take that water pill every day, and I would pay $50 a month for it because I believe it. So that's a worthwhile placebo, you know?
Yeah, the placebo effect is better than nothing.
That's exactly right.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
I've got a question to kick off this Q&A. Louis Henneke says, I wanted to say that I've loved listening to you on Jordan's podcast lately. It's really cool to have someone there to keep the conversation moving smoothly. With that, I've been following him for probably about 6 to 7 years. And wow. I've listened to every podcast for about 2 or 3 of those.
This is Louis?
Yeah.
Louis, thank you so much. That means the world to me. I really, really appreciate that. Louis, do me a favor. Email me. I'm going to give you a free month in the inner circle. Jordan@sciatfitness.com. I'm going to give you a free month, Louis. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know he has gone through each extreme of caffeine intake, and recently he has advocated for lowering caffeine to improve blood pressure and heart health as a whole. My question is, should caffeine be completely avoided for optimal heart health? I'd also love to hear more in general on caffeine and its impacts on the body, especially the heart. Thank you for all that you do. I've learned so much from both of you, and I'm a huge fan.
Love that. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I've gone all the way from owning a coffee company and drinking outrageous amounts of caffeine to completely cutting it out for a while. The reality is there are many, many benefits from a proper, appropriate dose of caffeine, not only from a heart health perspective, but also from a neurological perspective, cancer prevention, Alzheimer prevention. There's many, many benefits from that perspective. The thing that most people don't realize is, or that isn't discussed enough, is that there's an upper limit to it. And once you cross that upper limit, then you start getting detrimental effects. Now, I'll also say everyone responds differently to caffeine, right? So there are some people who, like if my wife has caffeine after 10 a.m., she's not sleeping that night. I could have 2 shots of espresso at 10 p.m. and fall asleep 30 minutes later. And this is often based on how you metabolize caffeine. Some people metabolize it very, very, very slow, like my wife. And some people metabolize it very, very, very quickly, like myself. So, and the only way that you can know which one you are is just to, you try it and you see how it makes you feel. Some people, when they have caffeine, they get severe anxiety. So for that person, they probably shouldn't have very much, if at all. Other people having caffeine, like it just overall makes them feel better, function better. So it's very, very individual. And so the benefits I'm about to talk about, they're irrelevant if caffeine makes you feel bad. So if you know you don't function well with caffeine, then don't have it. But just generally speaking, up to about 400 milligrams of caffeine is the upper limit of what is seen as you get the most health benefits from caffeine. And people will say, well, does it matter where it's coming from, whether it's coffee or an energy drink? And I would say, yes, it matters, not so much from the caffeine as much as from what else is in there, right? So caffeine from an energy drink and caffeine from coffee, you're essentially getting the same thing. And I know there are people are going to be arguing, it's different, natural, non-natural. You're essentially getting the same thing. Right. The main difference is what else is included in it. So in an energy drink, oftentimes you'll be getting a lot of other supplements that are included, other things that could have positive or negative effects. I prefer just usually coffee. Up to about 400 milligrams a day is where you'll see the benefits like peak. And then after that, you get diminishing returns. And number one, like obviously energy, mental focus are huge components of caffeine. There's zero question that athletic performance improves, and also mental performance will improve, whether it's cognitive function, your ability to remember. There are clear research showing that there's links to reduced incidences of Alzheimer's and many cancers as a result of having coffee. But again, if you don't like it, doesn't make you feel good, don't take it. The only sport that I've seen have negative results from drinking caffeine are sports like marksman shooting, or like the biathlon, where they have to shoot a gun, because when you're shooting a gun, whether it's a sniper or whatever it is, these athletes of the highest level are literally timing their trigger pull in between heartbeats, which is fucking wild. And like, this is not just what the athletes do, but this is what snipers in the military will do, where when they need to, they need to be able to feel their heartbeat and know when it's about to beat so that they can pull the trigger in between that beat, because especially over a super long distance shot, the beat can actually alter the direction slightly. And it might not seem like much over a short distance, but over a very long distance, that tiny change can drastically change the direction of that bullet. So for someone who's doing a long distance sharpshooting, having a faster heartbeat can be a real disadvantage because it's harder to time that trigger pull. But essentially for every other sport and athlete, it's very, very beneficial. So yeah, the thing is, and again, I already prefaced that if caffeine doesn't make you feel good, then it doesn't matter. But overall, between 200 to 400 milligrams of caffeine a day has tremendous potential benefits for performance, cognitive function, physical health, mental health, and basically everything. So yeah, I'm a huge proponent of it. But I mean, I cut it out for a while just because I wanted to see how it improved my blood pressure. And it did. It definitely did help improve my blood pressure, reduce stress, it reduced anxiety. If I'm ever noticing myself getting a little bit anxious, maybe it's social media related, business related, whatever, then I'll reduce my caffeine intake. And yeah, and it does help literally every time. It absolutely does. Sometimes I will, like yesterday I had zero caffeine. I didn't have a single milligram of caffeine. But today I woke up and boom, made coffee right away because I think I'm going to need it more today. So it's also okay to fluctuate. Some days you have high, some days you have low. It doesn't have to be every day that you have it.
Yeah, I also like to cycle off once a year at least, just to kind of reset my tolerance, if you will, my threshold. Because I do notice, you know, you start needing more to feel that
correct,
pep, and then after a while, you're having so much that you're getting more of the anxiety, more of the stress, more of the,
exactly,
yeah, and even with fatigue, sometimes I'll feel like coffee will make me more tired sometimes. And I feel like it's just because it's too much. I've ramped up too much.
Yeah. Like you burned yourself out a little bit. Like you're so overstimulated. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely individual, right?
Correct. And again, none of those benefits matter if it causes you severe anxiety or stress, or if it's causing you to not sleep at night, then that's way worse. Like all of those benefits are essentially nixed. They're out the window because sleep is far more important. Like a lack of sleep or poor quality sleep will wreak far more havoc than the benefits that you get from a couple hundred milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah. Yeah. My cutoff is around like 2, I notice.
So 200?
2 p.m. I mean.
2 p.m. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been so scientific as to measure how many milligrams I get typically. Mm. What I've started to do is pour my cold brew into a shot glass.
Oh, interesting.
It sounds ridiculous, but it's a small enough amount. I'll do like a half. Like that's what I did right before this because I felt like I was sipping it, not realizing how much I was getting. It goes down real smooth. And then, you know, I'd get the jitters. So I'm experimenting by using a shot glass. So it's like, all right, shot of coffee.
I like that. Do you take it like a shot or do you sip it?
I do.
You take it like a shot. You're just like, I was just imagining you sitting there like all like fancy sitting. Oh yeah. It's just sipping from the, no, you just down it.
Down the hatch, man.
That's so good. I love that.
Do you get withdrawal at all? Like yesterday when you had no caffeine at all, did you feel negative effects?
You know, I haven't. I've been the kind of person that I haven't really had any issues with that. And that's really, that's with anything, dude. Like, there's, I've never had, whether it's like, I took longer than a year without drinking alcohol. I think it was 2019. My wife and I were like, we're just not going to drink alcohol this year. I think because it started, if I remember correctly, and Louis's been following me for many years, so he might even remember this better, but I documented the whole thing. And I think it got to a point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to do dry January. And then dry January turned into dry January and February. And then by the end of February, I was like, let's just make it a challenge. Let's just not drink the whole year. My wife was like, all right, I'll do that with you. And we didn't drink the whole year. I think we actually didn't drink for like 14 months. And we went from drinking like several nights a week, and we don't pound shit. It's not like we're getting wasted, but like we like to have wine and drinks like several nights a week. And zero negative side effects from that, from no caffeine, any of that. And my mom had historically terrible side effects from going away from caffeine. She gets really bad migraines in general. So for me personally, I'm very fortunate. Who knows? Maybe as I get older, I'll start to notice them. That's just weird stuff like that happens. You start to get older, like weird things start happening. But yeah, throughout my life, I've been very, very blessed. Like I've never noticed any of that.
Definitely makes it easier. I find if I'm coming off coffee, I'll do green tea.
Get a little caffeine.
Yeah, a little bit less, but I definitely never get that pepped up feeling.
Yeah. Do you get headaches or anything from less caffeine?
I have. It's not super common, but sometimes I'll wake up and I'm like, yeah, I feel like I'm hungover, but I shouldn't be hungover
because
I didn't have any alcohol, you know? And maybe it's dehydration, but a lot of times I'm like, oh, right. I just haven't had, you know, any caffeine.
Right. Yeah. Makes total sense.
Cool. I've got one from Eileen Dietz.
Okay. What's up, Eileen? Thank you, everyone, asking these questions.
Yeah. And she says...
And they're just DMing you these questions, Tony?
Yeah.
They DM.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Tony's Instagram is in the show notes. If you have any questions, please DM him.
Yeah. I'd love to hear, even if it's not for the podcast and you just want to, you know, say what's up or give some input, that's always super, super appreciated. But yeah, she says, I'd love to hear about the benefits of sauna, infrared versus traditional. Any other thoughts? Thinking of buying one for my home. And I know we touched on this on the fitness or the recovery episode.
Yeah.
But I don't think we drilled down specifically on this too much. So
yeah,
I thought I'd throw this in.
I'll start by saying I love the sauna, not because of the benefits, which I'll talk about, but because I just like how it makes me feel. I love the heat. I hate the cold, love the heat. Now, I understand that this could immediately set me up for a severe bias and be like, well, why do you hate on cold baths, but not the sauna? I am not, again, not hating on cold baths. It's just me personally. I'd rather shit in my hands and clap than take a cold bath, but the sauna, I enjoy it. Now, like I've said, there are benefits. Do you hear my daughter in the background? Yeah. Did you hear that elsewhere? There are real benefits to cold baths, but not benefits that you couldn't get anywhere else. In the same way, there are benefits to the sauna, but not benefits that you couldn't get anywhere else. Now, the main benefit that has really very much surprised me from the sauna is that there are real cardiovascular benefits that you get from the sauna. But again, just to try and reduce my bias as much as possible. If you're trying to get cardiovascular benefits, I would rather you go on a walk or do zone 2 cardio than sit in a hot box, right? Like I would just way rather you do that because you get so many more benefits from actual movement. Now, again, there are real dopaminergic benefits to cold baths. There are legitimate benefits to it, but there are just so many other ways to get those benefits rather than just sitting in a fucking cold box. Same thing with a sauna. There are real cardiovascular benefits, cardiorespiratory benefits, but if you're really trying to get those, you're going to be better off exponentially from actually moving. Now, the sauna, the reason it surprised me that you get real cardiovascular benefits is because you're literally just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
But the research on it is pretty overwhelmingly clear that you get legitimate cardiovascular benefits from it, which I was shocked. And if more research comes out and says that that research is wrong, I honestly wouldn't be surprised. That would just confirm my bias, because when I think about cardiovascular benefits, everything that I've learned, all the research that I've done basically points to the need for movement, because it's not just about your heart rate. This is the thing that people really don't understand, where, like I've said before, if all you needed to improve your cardiovascular health was to get your heart rate up, then you could just watch a scary movie and your heart rate would get up and you'd get those same cardiovascular benefits, but you don't.
You could just drink coffee.
You just drink coffee, your heart rate goes up. That's not how it works. That's what surprised me about seeing the cardiovascular benefits from the sauna, because you're literally just sitting there. Usually you need all of the extra input and all the extra work from your muscles, from your joints, from the full body movement to gain those benefits. But that doesn't seem to be the case as much with the sauna. Again, you get more benefits from movement, but you still actually get real cardiovascular benefits from sitting in the sauna. So in terms of the difference between infrared and the other options, to be very blunt, I have not looked into that research in depth. So maybe I can do that before a subsequent podcast, so I can give a legitimate, well thought out response. As of right now, I don't have enough knowledge to give any opinion whatsoever. So I'm going to abstain for the time being, and then we can maybe plan for that for another one. So yeah, the reality is there are benefits, just like there are benefits to cold baths, but your overall benefit, your time is probably better spent actually moving. I will say one of the main reasons I love the sauna is because there's zero question that heat improves your ability to stretch. Mm-hmm. It improves your ability, your muscles get more loosened, your nervous system can calm down, and you can stretch way better in a sauna than you could when you're cold. This is why before you lift, you warm up so that your body is more warm, so that you can actually stretch better, so you have a better range of motion. So when I'm in a sauna, I rarely just sit there hunched over. I like to use that as an opportunity to stretch and to mobilize. And so, and we all know, hopefully, actually, I shouldn't say that, because there are some people who say stretching is stupid, you don't need it. But stretching and maintaining mobility and flexibility is unbelievably important. The way I like to phrase this, like, I've coached literally thousands of people now throughout my years coaching, well over like about 15 years of coaching. As people get older, I've never had one person say, oh God, I regret being this mobile. I regret being like this flexible. I have had many clients say, oh, I wish I did more mobility when I was younger, because when you have a lack of it, it can really be a detriment to your lifestyle and to your quality of life. So when I sit in a sauna, I'm doing hamstring stretches. I'm doing thoracic mobility stretches for my upper back, for my posture. I'm doing adductor stretches. I'm doing glute stretches. I'm still active in there and I'm lightly moving, but really stretching. And the extra range that you can get from that heat is wild. I am so much more flexible in there than I am when I'm not. Mm-hmm. And the cool part is I see that mobility carry over to when I'm not in there anymore. So that for me is, I think, probably equally, if not more important than the cardiovascular benefits of it, to be very honest with you. I think just the ability to rapidly enhance mobility over a relatively short time frame is incredibly important. And so much of a lack of mobility is a lot of times people think a lack of mobility is because your muscles are really tight and your muscles are short and they're not actually they don't have the ability to stretch. It's usually a neuromuscular issue. Mm-hmm. It's your brain telling your muscles, it's like, oh, no, like you haven't gone through this range of motion. This is dangerous. So your brain is preventing your muscles from actually being able to go that, to get that extra range. And so when you go into a warm room or a hot room like a sauna, your brain can relax a little bit. It allows you to go through that bigger range of motion and your brain can say, oh, you know what? Like, this is safe. I'm not going to get hurt. And when you can do that on a consistent basis, then that will actually transfer to outside of the sauna as well. So I think that's probably, if not the most, it's one of the most important benefits of it.
Yeah. And I do wonder, I mean, I'm sure there's different ways to do it. But when I think of like a sauna that you could get for the home, a lot of them are pretty small. They're just like little like porta saunas that you can sit in.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's in the budget, you know, getting something a little bigger where you could move around might be worthwhile.
Yeah. So my wife and I we're building a house right now. It hasn't started building, but we're in the process of like, basically, we have to be approved and all that, but I want to build a ridiculous gym, and in the gym, we're going to put a sauna. And the first thing I said to the architect, I was like, it needs to be big enough for two people to stretch in there at the same time. And so that was a big component. I was like, this can't be a little porta sauna. Like, I want it to be like a big size sauna. So
for what it's worth, when you were describing your stretching routine in the sauna, I was just imagining like you with a bunch of dudes in towels and they're all just sitting there. You're putting on a show.
Like, I love how you like, really specified a bunch of dudes in towels, not naked dudes. I wasn't thinking about you and naked dudes. You're all wearing towels in this imagination. Mean,
it was a comical image. All right.
They're always in like the public gyms. There's always at least one dude. These are always like dudes who are usually 60 plus.
Yep.
Dude, they just let it all hang and they're just like, they'll come up and they'll talk to you. They'll put one leg on the bench right in front of you and just you're looking right at it. I'm like, what the fuck? Like the confidence that it takes to do that. Like I don't understand it. It's pretty wild, but all the respect to them.
All the respect.
It's crazy.
Have you ever done yoga where the room is really warm?
Bikram yoga. Yeah. I did that in high school. I didn't do it for the benefits of yoga. I did it because I was cutting weight for wrestling. Oh. And I basically was able to just, I would go there. There would be like, there were a lot of Bikram yoga classes and studios around me in my area. And I would go to like, I'll do a free trial here and a free trial here and a free trial here just so I could cut weight for an hour and a half.
Yeah. Water weight, right?
Yeah. Water weight. Exactly. And again, it's not losing fat. I was just losing water in a very unhealthy way when I was a high school wrestler. Please, nobody do this. I think it's 26 poses? How many poses in Bikram yoga? I think it's 26 if my memory serves me correctly. I think it's 13 standing and 13, 26 yoga asanas. Yeah. I think it's 13 standing, 13 sitting. And it was brutal. I could not believe how difficult that shit was. Yeah. It was, I would actually love to, maybe the only issue with me doing a class like that now for YouTube is I don't know if the camera could survive in a room that hot, but yeah, it was a great overall workout and exercise. Maybe I'd like to get back in a little Bikram yoga. I think that would be really good for me. I might do that.
Every time I've done yoga, I come out of it being like, man, I'm going to do this way more often.
And then, you know. I don't like, for me personally, there are some people who yoga, like they love the spirituality of it. They love that. That's never been my thing. When I like to work out, like I like to work out, you know, I'm not doing it for the sun salutations and all that. And again, not making fun of it. It's just not my thing. I actually really enjoyed the Bikram yoga because I was like, man, this is like a great, I feel like I'm working. I feel like there were strength benefits to it, you know, not like strength from the perspective of lifting weights, but there were poses where it's like, I'm legitimately strength training. I'm not
like
weightlifting.
Gymnastic
but
kind
of
strength. Yeah.
The isometric strength. Absolutely. So yeah, I've never been a fan of I remember in high school, we had a high school wellness. There was a yoga elective and I took that and it was a very much like sun salutations, da da da. And the best part of that class is the teacher was so into that she was like, if you just want to lay down and rest during the class, you're welcome to. And I would sleep I would go in and I would lie on my back and I'd sleep for the whole hour. And that was like my favorite class that I took in high school.
Yeah. To their credit, they were consistent, you know?
They were very logically consistent. Yeah. She was great. I wish I remember. Oh my God. I Miss Camborian was her name. That was Miss Camber. I can't believe I remember that. Miss Camborian, Sudbury, Massachusetts, Lincoln Sudbury. If anyone knows her, I doubt she's listening, but love you, Miss Camborian.
When you brought up the neuromuscular connection, is that how you said it? Yeah. You know, I was in a yoga class and I was doing some kind of stretch where you're seated with your legs in front of you and you're bending your back towards the floor. Mm-hmm. Your head's going down towards the floor. And you know, I'd gotten to the point where I was pretty much like, yeah, this is it. I can't go any further. I'm trying, but there's nothing there. And the instructor came up behind me and they just gently like put their arms, like their forearms on my back and just lean their body forward. And I got probably 20 degrees more of range of motion without feeling stressed or panicked or tightness or anything. And I was just like, holy cow. Like, I can't believe, I thought my body couldn't contort that way.
Yeah.
It was just there. And so when you say it's like neuromuscular, it's not your actual muscles tightening up. It's your mind.
Isn't that wild?
That was a very powerful illustration of that for me.
The longstanding belief that your muscles are legitimately tight and that you need to loosen your muscles in more recent years has been proven completely false. That it's not a tightness issue of the muscle. It's that your brain is thinking that, oh, this is a dangerous place for me to go. And that's when often strains and pulls will happen when you try and take it through a range that your brain isn't ready for. And so that's in your, it will literally, the reason your muscles fire is because your brain allows them to. And so when your brain is thinking this is a dangerous place to go, your brain will, it would rather have a slight strain than what else it thinks it could happen. Like, it might think, oh my God, your leg's about to rip off. Like, this is a really dangerous situation. So it will lock you up, which will give you a strain or a pull, which is obviously not fun and it's very uncomfortable and it can really hurt. But it thinks something way worse is about to happen. And that's why it locks up and it prevents that range, which is why that type of stretching can be very beneficial. There are other types of stretching as well that where it's actually like very intense types of stretching where like you essentially you get into a stretch maybe like 80% of how far you could go. So it's comfortable. It's not hurting yet, but then you do a hard isometric contraction. So let's say, for example, you're trying to do the splits. This is when I was very, very close to doing the splits. This is a lot of what I would do. I would go into a lateral split where my legs would be out wide, and then I would contract my adductor. So I'd basically try and drive my legs inward towards the ground, and my adductors would light up, and I'd hold it for like 10 to 20 seconds hard. It would be like a 90% contraction as hard as I can. Then I'd let go and I'd breathe. Whew, then I'd sink lower. Then I would do it again. Hard, hard, hard for like 10 to 20 seconds. Squeeze, relax, whew, sink even lower. And man, that got me the most quick results in terms of added range to my mobility that I've ever gotten in my life.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? What is it about the series of contractions and relaxations that...
Oh man, my lack of terminology is going to shine very brightly right now. I need to bring on my coach who is helping me go through that. His name is Garrett, because what I'm about to say is definitely not going to sound correct. But basically, when you contract and when you squeeze really, really tight, you're essentially allowing your brain to relax a little bit more. You're allowing your brain to relax and say, this is a safe range of motion. And then you can get deeper and deeper and deeper into it. That is definitely not the technical terminology that needs to be said. So maybe we can do like a three-way call with my coach Garrett one time and he can come on and fully explain it. But yeah, it's wild, man. It's really extraordinary. And that's why some of the best stretching and mobility routines are strength-based. Even if you watch, a lot of people look at these like quote unquote meathead bodybuilders. When you watch them do their routines, some of them are so unbelievably flexible. They're doing full splits. It's because they don't just train to get big. They also train through a full range of motion. Mm-hmm. And that comes through strength training. And so they can load very, very, very heavy. Even if you watch Olympic lifters, Olympic weightlifters, look at how deep they get in their squats. Yeah. Look at how unbelievably incredible. Flexible they are. And it's from that loaded stretching. So it's a really wonderful tool.
What's Garrett's specialty as a coach?
I believe it's more body weight calisthenic type movements. This kid is a freak, man. He's a freak in the best way, like doing single arm pull-ups, no problem. And I don't mean the fake single arm pull-ups where someone holds on the bar with one hand and they hold on to their wrist with the other hand. That's not a single arm pull-up. That's a two-arm pull-up.
Single grip pull-up, yeah. A
single grip, but like not even, like, because you're still holding on. It's the dumbest trick in the book. When people are like, yeah, I'm doing a single arm pull-up, they hold on to the bar with one hand and they grab their wrist with the other. It's like you're still pulling with both hands. He will literally hold on to the bar with one hand, sometimes I think just a couple of fingers, and do chin-ups.
Jeez.
Like for reps. And he'll do single arm handstands and he'll do single arm handstands with full splits on. He's amazing. He is really extraordinary. So
does he have an Instagram? Should we put it in the notes?
Let me see if I can find it. One sec. I haven't spoken to him in too long, ever since my my daughter's been born, I've just been out of touch with too many people. Garrett Movement. So Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T, Movement. Really, really great kid. Very smart and has just ridiculous, ridiculous content. Look at this. I'll show you this video of him. Look at this.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. I know the people listening can't see it.
He's got his, he's doing a handstand, but then his back is curved behind him.
Yeah.
And his legs are basically making like a U, and he's completely freestanding on two legs.
Two hands, excuse me. Just create. Yeah. You'll be obsessed with his Instagram because he does the craziest stuff and makes it look ridiculously easy.
You got one more for a quick one?
Yeah. You want me to look up a question?
Yeah. Do you have another one?
Yeah, man, for sure. Okay. So someone asked me, you posted your plan to stay productive with tasks the other day. Can you please post again? This is Saz Razmataz. So I have a method that I've used. I'm not sure if I've spoken about it on the podcast before. I probably have many years ago. You know my method for productivity? It's the 1-3-5 method.
No, but my buddy actually brought it up to me the other day. He was like,
it
sounds like 1-3-5, like Jordan. I was like, what? yeah, he's been watching your stuff. So
I've been using this since like 2015. And tell your buddy I say thank you. I appreciate that.
For sure.
It's very simple and it's worked. I've been using it since 2015. So that's wild, like 8 years. How crazy is that? 2015 was like 8 years ago.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. So very simple, very effective. So my 1-3-5 method, I've always used this for business, but I'm sure you could use it for literally anything in life. So the number one stands for your do or die. Let me just say this. I think a lot of people think in order to be productive, I've seen people's to-do lists, daily to-do lists. They've put like 40 things on there. And if it works for you, great. But personally, I think it's a terrible idea because it's overwhelming. And and let's say you get 6 things done on that to-do list with 40 things. It looks like you've done nothing. And it's easy to demoralize yourself and feel bad. And I got nothing accomplished. For my daily to-do list, it's a 1-3-5. The number one is the do or die. That's the only thing that must get done that day. It is one thing. That's it. And if as long as I do that, it's a successful day. So it's very hard to not be successful on any given day because all you have to do is one thing. And I think people hear that like only one thing. It's like if you are successful at doing one thing every day for 10 years, you will be more successful than 99% of people in the world. So the do or die method is just the do or die thing is your one thing that must get done. So early on in my business, maybe it was finishing an article or publishing an article. Maybe it was getting all of my client programs done for that day. Maybe it was replying to all of my emails. Maybe it was sometimes my do or die is just I need to get my workout in today. That's the one thing I need to do. Maybe it was making a social media post, whatever it was, but I had one thing that was, and it would change on a daily basis based on what needed to get done. But my do or die is one thing. It's not two things, it's not five things, it's one thing that day. After that, I have my daily medication. These are 3 things. So I would have the number one on top and I would make it like a little pyramid. So the number one, this is the one thing that has to get done. Then I have 3 things underneath that. And I call these my daily medication. These are things that they're important. And often one of my daily medications would become a do or die later in the week, right? So once I accomplished one of my do or dies, let's say my do or die was finishing my client programs. But then one of my daily medications was getting an Instagram post done. Well, once I got all my client programs done that week, then I could move my Instagram post to my do or die. So that would be the next day. So it could be an Instagram post, could be a finishing a YouTube video, maybe a podcast, whatever it is. Maybe that could also be my client programs, emails, getting a workout in, whatever it is. I have 3 things that are important that once the do or die is finished, or if I need a break from the do or die for a few minutes, for a few hours, I can work on those. And I have those. And then the 5, the bottom of the pyramid, these are what I call nap time activities. And these are things that you can do instead of taking a nap. And I'll start by saying I named it this again in 2015, 8 years ago when I was, what, I was like 24 or something. So this is at a time in my life when I thought anyone who takes naps is a piece of shit, right? And I was like, there's no reason to take a nap. Now I'm like, if you want to take a nap, like, go for it. Sometimes naps are great, but I haven't taken a nap in a long time. Just, I mean, you know, it's very difficult at this point.
This is a nap themed episode. Sun salutation naps, you know, productivity naps.
This is when I was like, this is also when grinding was really cool. Like, just grinding on your business, work, never sleep, never rest, just work. So that's where the name comes from. I don't have that same mentality anymore. But it was like, do things. These are easy tasks that you can do that require very little energy. So sometimes that was clearing out my inbox, right? Like, just going in, if I've got spam, whatever, just, you know, clear it out. It's going to make me feel better. If it's cleaning up my apartment, cool. That's fine. That'll make me feel better. If it's going on a walk, right? It'll make me feel better. Maybe it's calling my mom, right? Something that, like, I haven't done in a little bit, and I'll feel better once I do it, and having a conversation with her. These are things you can do instead of taking a nap that are still going to be productive over the long term. They're usually not like the most important, especially from a productivity perspective, but they're better than doing nothing. And so every day I wake up, here's my one, here's my three, here's my five. And as long as I get the one done, I'm good. That's it for the day. Like, I am successful. Very often I'll get one and a couple of the threes done, and then maybe a couple of the fives done. I never get them all done. I never, ever in my entire life have I gotten the one, all of the threes, and all of the fives done on a single day. But I think the reason I've been so productive over the course of the last, I started my business in July of 2011. I've started doing this since 2015, but I think I still did this even without actually doing it. I just get one thing done every day. That's it. And like, I think a lot of people overestimate how productive they actually are. And when they start seeing like, okay, you just got to do one thing, they're like, oh shit, like, okay, I really got to get this one thing done. If you can get one thing done every day, you will be wildly more productive than most people.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you're talking about is managing priorities. You know, one of the things that I've learned, that I've heard a lot, but is true, is if everything's a priority, nothing is. So I love that you got the one thing that you need to get done. And I think I've intuitively kind of been doing that over the years. And I agree wholeheartedly. It's a great way of thinking about it.
Dude, I love that. I love it. If everything is a priority, nothing is a priority. That's a good way to end the podcast and call. Think about that going forward, right? If everything is a priority, nothing is a priority. Similar to the, if you try to please everybody, you please nobody, right? It's like, don't stand on the fence. Like, say what you believe, mean it. Prioritize one thing a day. Get that thing done. Give that thing your all. And also, don't hate on naps. Naps are great. If you want to take naps, I've come full circle on that one. I was a young 24-year-old. And if you're 24-year-old listening to this, or 25 or 26, and you think you know everything, I promise you don't. Because when you're older, you'll be like, I was an idiot. And I'm only 32. So I know when I'm 36 and 40 and 45 and 50 and all that, and God willing, as old as I can possibly get. I think if you're not looking back on your life and thinking I was an idiot when I was younger, you're not improving. So it's one of the best things you can take, is just know that whatever you think right now, there's a real chance you're going to change your mind on that sooner or later.
Love it. Love it.
Well, I love you, Tony. Thank you everyone for listening. If you have any questions and you want us to answer them, please send them to Tony. His Instagram is in the description. Please follow Tony. He's the fucking man, as you can tell. And that's it. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you soon.